Kirk Cousins, Michael Penix, and how about the Jace McClellan pick in day three? And also weigh in with Kyle Pitts versus Drake London, plus all the ancillary wide receivers that were added. We break down the entire Falcons offense and offseason with Will McFadden of the Believe in Falcons podcast on the Believe Network here. So great to have Will aboard. And we talk all things Falcons in this episode, spinning it towards fantasy and some really good takeaways here as we go through the show. So thanks so much for Will for coming on this special edition. Will McFadden joins the show, hosts the Believe in Falcons podcast, Believe Network, that I recently joined over the past couple of months here. And you have a longstanding history covering the Falcons. Can't wait to dive in as one of the most interesting teams in the last few years, just in terms of what they've spent at the skill positions, not necessarily on offense, not necessarily on quarterback here. And now they finally double dip at quarterback, which is one of the most interesting storylines of the whole offseason. Start with Kirk Cousins, you know, just in terms of that acquisition a few months ago and setting the table for an exploitable NFC South. So what did you think when they signed Kirk Cousins going out there, true free agency for the big time quarterback, and what you thought that meant? And then we'll kind of get into Michael Penix and kind of where we sit today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Chad, and welcome to the Believe family. It's awesome to have you on board. Yeah, I think that, you know, you can even go even further back and the Arthur Smith firing, but choosing to retain Terry Fontenot and choosing to keep a lot of the front office in place. That was, I think, a reflection of the work that they had done to navigate a very tricky cap situation, keep this team kind of afloat, but it was very clear that the glaring issue was the quarterback position. And honestly, last season was a little bit of a referendum on like just how much you can accomplish with a well-rounded roster, but a big deficiency. And that's the word that Arthur Blank himself used at the quarterback position. And they kind of tried to straddle that middle ground that I think a lot of fans now in hindsight of the Michael Penix pick have said, well, why didn't you just go get Jacoby Brissett? Why didn't you just go get Gardner Minshew? That's kind of what the Falcons had been doing the last couple of years, right? Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder certainly aren't as established as maybe some of those guys that I just named, but that was kind of the thought process is, okay, we can just kind of get by at the quarterback position and really improve the rest of the roster and not sink a ton of money into one spot. Because that didn't work, I really think they just said, all right, who's the biggest fish out there? And it's not very often that a player of Kirk Cousins' caliber becomes available as a free agent. And so they took kind of the biggest possible swing at it. Yes, the contract is big, 180 overall, 100 million guaranteed. But if you look at it's very front loaded. I know a lot of people kind of in the hindsight again of the Michael Penix pick have talked about you can get out of it after a couple of years if you need to. But realistically, like I think that's what their time frame with Kirk Cousins was anyway. He's going to be 36 years old. He is coming off that Achilles. I expect him to bounce back. He was playing exceptionally well last season before he got hurt in week 8. He was playing kind of MVP caliber football. And if he can get close to that, I think you're going to see a big improvement in Kyle Pitts. I think you're going to see a big improvement in Drake London, Bijan Robinson as well. And if the offense can kind of match a little bit of the jump that the defense made last year, then the thinking is the Falcons should easily be able to win the NFC South. And as Raheem Morris likes to say, once you get into the postseason, who knows what can happen? You can go on a run there. So the quarterback position was clearly the focus for the Falcons this offseason. And it cost them a pretty penny, but they ultimately took the biggest swing possible at the position.
Yeah, and you know the Tom Brady timeline for quarterback erosion or lack thereof. I mean, he seemed to be getting stronger in his later 30s and 40s when you looked at his arm strength compared to those early Patriots days. And I think a lot of people forget Matt Ryan, that trajectory and what we saw with the Colts after he left the Falcons, not uncommon, you know, in terms of that lack of arm strength. All of a sudden, you're a non-mobile guy and you lose even more. It becomes a huge issue. And I just think people are assuming Kirk Cousins more than a couple years is going to be viable. So I think this timetable works rather well. And the thing I would say is you work backwards. In free agency, when you get a look at a quarterback, first of all, you don't get many looks at decent quarterbacks or even good quarterbacks. And the other part is, you don't know what's going to happen in the draft. So everyone's saying in February and March that, oh, well, why didn't you just know you were going to take Penix and he was going to be available and all this stuff? I think that's a huge wild card to say it's the most important position and you probably shouldn't mess around because, you know, if you get squeezed out, you go, ah, Cousins too expensive. Let's stop at 38 million on the bidding. And then you say, well, we'll get Penix. And then you get squeezed out there. Look at where the Raiders are. The Raiders kind of toyed around, right? You know, and they didn't make a move. And now they're left with Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. And I don't think that's where they wanted to be 4 months ago. So I think you'd rather have two than zero. Transitioning to the Penix pick, I've been a known supporter. And this is before I kind of heard, you know, I watched the draft on mute. And, you know, before I heard all of the, I can't believe they did this. And this is going to be the most de-optimized selection. Take a pass rusher. All this kind of talk. I love the Jordan Love pick. I love when a team takes not an overt need. That to me perks my ears up on how good they think this player is going to be and how important it is. Talk about your initial reaction to Michael Penix. And obviously we've had a couple of weeks to digest it. What have you heard? And does that, you know, align with your thinking of team building here at the Falcons?
Yeah, I was definitely surprised initially, but I think even in that surprise reaction, I understood probably what the team's thinking was. And I spent 4 years kind of from 2017 through the 2020 season working for the Falcons inside of the building. So I understand a little bit how teams go about building their, like, the strategy and building their roster, but also how reactive sometimes teams can be to their recent history. And when you look at kind of at the end of the Matt Ryan era, they clearly wanted and were talking about the teams that were able to bridge that gap, and they failed at that. And I think that this offered them a little bit of a chance to reset the table and take another bite at the apple. And if this had been Matt Ryan, if we had rewound the clock and this was, you know, 2020, and instead of taking AJ Terrell, they took a quarterback in that draft, I think people would have said, okay, it's, you know, a little bit of a waste of a first round pick, but it's not going to be a waste if once Matt Ryan is finished, then we've got the quarterback for the future. So it doesn't help this team this year, but it could help the team moving forward. I think the fact that they had just spent all of this money and already brought in a new quarterback had a lot of people, you know, freaking out and up in arms because it was viewed as such a clear double dipping at a position when one player is not going to be helping you on the field in the 2024 season. But I just kind of think that, again, if you look at what the Falcons failed to do after Matt Ryan, they viewed this as if Kirk Cousins comes in and does what we expect him to do, we probably won't get another chance at a top 10 quarterback here in the next couple of years. And then you are left in this little weird limbo, and is 2 years of maybe success, that's a very short window. And then do you want to be right back here, kind of in this valley of quarterback play once again, where you're either going to have to mortgage your salary cap for the future and go get one of these top free agents, or you're going to be picking a quarterback in the teens, the 20s, who is, again, maybe the third, fourth, fifth quarterback off the board, and then you're playing him right away as a rookie. So this offers the chance of a very talented player, and I think a lot of people look at Penix and you hear, all right, maybe he is the best arm talent in the draft. Caleb Williams might be the most special package. Drake May is young, but he has similar types of overall athleticism, arm ability, everything like that. Jaden Daniels, just a freak athlete, Lamar Jackson-esque. But if you look at Michael Penix, the player that I immediately thought of when they made the pick was Matthew Stafford. And coming from LA with Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris and Jimmy Lake, understanding and seeing the type of special throwing ability that Matthew Stafford has, I think that they looked at Penix in much the same way and felt that that could be really the engine that keeps this offense going once Kirk Cousins, you know, is over here in Atlanta. And honestly, the bigger factor that I think a lot of people are overlooking is the need to have a high caliber backup in today's NFL. And people are saying that you're going to be wasting Michael Penix's rookie contract. Maybe if everything goes according to plan and Kirk Cousins does stay healthy for 32 games and then takes you on playoff runs and everything's working out hunky-dory, sure. Then they kind of are eating that benefit that you would otherwise have. But let's say it's week 8 and the team is 5-3 and you're feeling really good about it. And then Kirk Cousins, let's not say he like tears his Achilles again, but he just has a little bit of a nagging turf toe injury that causes him to miss 3 or 4 games. All right, you would feel much better about Michael Penix stepping in at age 24, which a lot of people look at his age again as a detriment. I think for this specific reason, it could be a benefit to the Falcons. He's played in a lot of big games. He does have a lot of experience and snaps under his belt. He steps in, he's able to kind of keep things afloat and going, as opposed to a Taylor Heinicke, who we saw last year in kind of that back and forth rotation with Desmond Ridder. So I think that a lot of people were looking at the opportunity cost and what the Falcons missed out on, but the rest of the league told you what they thought about the defensive players in this draft. Liatu Latu was the first defensive player. He went 15, right? So taking one of these edge defenders, I don't think was going to push the Falcons over the top in the way that a lot of people expected that it would. And the opportunity to pass up a quarterback that they felt very strongly about, I think was just too much for the Falcons there at number 8. So it was a little bit about the opportunity to right a wrong that they couldn't get correct the first time around. But then the other half of it is, I think they really do believe in Michael Penix, the player. Now they have to get that right. If they don't, and if they're wrong about that part, then this is going to look pretty bad in hindsight. But for right now, I do believe that that line of thinking is at least worth buying into.
Yeah. And the eval, like you said, the eval is the most important thing. If they had him as QB2 in the class, then getting him at 8, and like you said, not being up there in future classes, that's all that matters. I don't think Jordan Love, that pick, you know, I follow Green Bay closely, and they were lamenting of like, this is a wasted pick. I heard all the same early dialogue, and you had Aaron Rodgers playing at an MVP level at that time, which I don't know if it made it worse or better. So they kept saying, why didn't we get a wide receiver? Why didn't we do this? Why didn't we do that? But now that they're obviously looking towards a massive contract with Jordan Love and continuing 30 plus years of strong quarterback play into the future. Again, one of the well-built franchises that you say, hey, they don't really have many down years. So, and if Atlanta gets on that trajectory because of a move like this, you know, again, no one's going to in 2 years lament the pick that was Michael Penix, even though all you can do is pull up receipts of how everyone pretty much universally didn't understand the pick at this point in time. So I think that's very important.
It's also one asset for this selection, as opposed to multiple assets, maybe in the future, right? Where if you do need to go get a quarterback, you got to trade up, you got to do something. And then you're talking about potentially 2 first round picks invested, a day 2 pick, maybe a day 3 pick. And right now, it's the number 8 overall pick. You feel like you could have gotten an impact player, but maybe they did. And maybe it's just going to take a little bit of time for him to hit the field, but it's one asset versus potentially multiple.
Yeah. What if this season doesn't go overly well? Like one of my co-hosts, Jordan McNamara, always kind of mentions, he's like, what if Kirk Cousins is not like healthy? What if he falls off a little bit? What if things aren't great like everyone thinks it's going to be? And I was like, well, then, you know, they either are going to have a high pick, let's say, in a worst case scenario, in a draft where you don't feel this good about the quarterbacks at least a year out, or you have to trade multiple picks, like you said, to auto-correct what you could have just done at 8, where you said, hey, maybe defensive pick wasn't quite as clear, you know, clairvoyant as an easy of a selection as we might think. In terms of upgrading the pass catchers here, Kirk Cousins in, Michael Penix right there waiting. You know, it's going to be way better probably than any of the backups they've had in recent years. Do you think it's going to help Drake London or Kyle Pitts, two guys that they've spent huge value on in the draft, and yet without the quarterback, you know, you kind of say, well, I've got this great car, it looks flashy, there's no engine. So they burned rookie contract years for those two players, and yet they really haven't got enough production out of them. The quarterback position should help. Who do you think it helps more?
You know, it's a cop out to say both. I do think it's going to help both, but I would bet that it helps Kyle Pitts a little bit more. And the reason why I say that is Drake London and Desmond Ridder were very close on the team. Their connection was probably strongest amongst any of the receivers that Desmond Ridder was working with. So if there was a situation where Des was uncomfortable, he was going to look Drake London's way. And we saw some really big monster games from Drake London last year. I think of the Tampa Bay game where he just had that incredible catch down the right sideline, like leaping over 2 defenders, made one of the most acrobatic plays that I've seen a receiver make. So it was just kind of the overall limitations of the quarterback position that I think held Drake London back from being a 1,000-yard receiver. But I don't think we were that far off from seeing, at least on a game-to-game basis, kind of the overall ability that Drake London represents. And I do think he has the talent to be a number one wide receiver in this league. The Kyle Pitts of it all, when you saw him paired with Matt Ryan in Matt's final year here in Atlanta, he's the 1,000-yard rookie, right? And since then, he's been dealing with injuries, which should not be discounted as a big factor in why Kyle Pitts has kind of taken a little bit of a step back. But ultimately, he just has not been able to find that chemistry, that connection with either Marcus Mariota or Desmond Ridder. And so if you look at a player like Kirk Cousins, who is able to kind of get the ball out on time, who is able, I think, to manipulate defenses a little bit more, which should help a player who is working in the middle of the field a little bit more than maybe Drake London would, that is going to be, I think, huge for Kyle Pitts. And then the other thing is, you know, the ability to kind of like add that touch and layer the ball over some of these linebackers is something that I think Kirk Cousins doesn't necessarily get enough credit for. And it wasn't a big tool in Desmond Ridder's bag. So when you see kind of, all right, let's get it under the safety, but over that linebacker, fit it into Kyle Pitts, that should be an area that I think this Falcons offense will shine. But the other part of this is, I think, the Falcons offense itself. I gave a lot of credit to Arthur Smith and Dave Ragone's ability to scheme up run plays. Like, I think that they were very creative, not just with personnel packaging, which they were really kind of cool to see how they would manipulate defensive personnel groupings just by the actual bodies they had on the field, but also some of their run designs I kind of liked. And obviously what they did in 2022 speaks for itself, but I felt like there was a lot lacking in terms of creative play design in the passing game. Coming from the Sean McVay offense, I don't expect Zach Robinson to have that same issue. I think you're going to be able to see Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Rondale Moore, Darnell Mooney, whoever they have out there, with much kind of wider open looks, which obviously is going to make life a little bit easier on the quarterback, but it's also going to allow for more run after the catch opportunities, which frankly weren't available that often in Arthur Smith's offense. You had a lot of comeback routes, curl routes, routes where you stopped the momentum of the receiver or they were coming back downhill. Now I think you're going to see a lot more of these crossers, a lot more of these kind of post routes where the receiver is able to keep running away from the defender that is covering him. And that is going to create more yards after the catch. So I do think you're going to see much more production out of the passing game as a whole. And I think that right now that would benefit Kyle Pitts a little bit more, just because Drake London has already been a little bit closer to what I think his ceiling truly is over the last couple of years.
Yeah, people forget Kyle Pitts was considered one of the best players in the draft, and injuries have really derailed him. But like you said, you know, layering the ball and getting some of those mismatches over the middle of the field, and just a huge wide receiver like guy that gets tight end coverage sometimes. And I think it's just, you know, that quarterback play has really hindered him to a large amount. You kind of alluded to some of the ancillary guys. Darnell Mooney was, I think, a surprise selection. And when you look at what his contract actually was for a guy that's fallen off over the past couple of years. And then you look at Rondale Moore, round two, and he really never got off the ground outside of a couple plays there in Arizona, round two pick that they got off the trash heap. And this is a huge upgrade, too, because they had a lot of questions behind Pitts and behind London in previous years. So you're talking about quarterback upgrade, but man, now you talk about the top four or five guys. You include Bijan Robinson there in the weapons as well. This is really a massive upgrade on the ancillary end. So Mooney, where do you think he's going to align, you know, and fit within this offense? And then Rondale Moore, it's been a few years and they didn't really figure out. And that was my big key with him. Maybe Malachi Corley is a similar type guy of like, do we really get enough production out of this guy who's a rather unique player? And Rondale Moore was a great version of that. But still, I wonder if Atlanta can figure out the key that's going to unlock him.
Yeah, one of the big issues, I think, with Desmond Ridder was, you know, at times he would lock on to his first read a little too much, but also at times he would see the first read there and then not pull the trigger. I don't think you're going to have that issue with Kirk Cousins. And that's where I think Rondale Moore is maybe better suited than he was even in Arizona, where I don't know if that's necessarily Kyler Murray's strength either. Like, Kyler likes to improvise and he likes to extend these plays. And you're going to see Kirk Cousins probably hit that back foot, third drop, hitch, ball out. And if you can create that space underneath, which I expect this offense to, I think Rondale Moore and then actually a day three pick, Casey Washington out of Illinois. Like, I like both of their skill sets to be able to create quick separation, flash their hands, catch the ball, and then go. So that is where I'm really bullish on Rondale Moore. I liked him a lot coming out in the draft. And I was surprised that his career really hasn't added up to what I thought it would, but he does get a little bit of a second chance here in Atlanta. And so I do have bigger expectations for him. Certainly, you know, you mentioned the upgrade, like we were having guys like Damir Bird, Scotty Miller, you know, those were some of the extra options for Atlanta's passing in the last couple of years. I like him as a significant upgrade over that. And then Darnell Mooney is really an interesting player, and he may be kind of like the make or break, I think, acquisition of this offseason. Because if you look back a couple of years ago before his injury, which I know has also been kind of reportedly nagging him throughout the last couple of seasons, he had a true breakout year in his second season and was a go-to guy for Justin Fields. And really, it's kind of his quickness, his sudden burst with the ball in his hands, but also before catching the ball while he's running his routes, and his ability to manipulate a defender's speed and kind of slow down, speed up. And that's what some of my favorite route runners have, that ability. It's something Calvin Ridley had in spades down here while he was in Atlanta. So if he's able to kind of get that back again, now a couple of years removed from those nagging injuries that he really dealt with, then he could really fit in as kind of that Z receiver opposite of Drake London and Kyle Pitts. And I don't think we should underestimate the fact that Kyle Pitts is probably going to be a de facto X at times, because Drake London is such a good blocker that you can move those guys around. You could split Drake London in really tight, almost in your split out tight end position, and have Kyle Pitts out wide. And that's going to create some matchup problems for the defense. Cause what do? You bring a safety or a linebacker out there on Kyle Pitts, or do you treat him as a wide receiver? And then if you're going to leave your other guy in there on Drake London, well, that's a clear mismatch as well. So if you're looking at the two new additions, I think the play design is going to benefit Rondale Moore, coupled with the quarterback who understands where the ball needs to go pre-snap, and he knows how to get it there right now. But then when you look at Darnell Mooney, I think he is going to benefit from probably drawing less attention for sure than those other two guys on the other side. But you can almost scheme up really favorable one-on-one opportunities to put him in a position to succeed with what he does really well. So that's going to come down, I think, a little bit to the coaching, a little bit to the play design, but they've added two players who, if you look at what they've just done recently, I think the market is rightfully a little bit lower on them. But Terry Fontenot, back with the Saints and here with the Falcons, has kind of cut his teeth on finding these guys that the market has undervalued, and their best days are still ahead of them. So the hope is that both Rondale Moore and Darnell Mooney fit that category.
Yeah, you breaking that down, I realized they could be a real matchup problem, because I'm now thinking about schematically, you know, if you're a nickel, I mean, who are you putting the safety on is what I would say. If you have to roll things down, you don't want to do it on Rondale Moore. You don't want to do it on Mooney. You don't want to do it on Drake London. You don't want to do it on Kyle Pitts. Like, I'm already foreseeing this as a problem if they are fully healthy, because those aren't good matchups. And Pitts is really the linchpin there of saying you can't put a non-corner in. Frankly, smaller corners, that's a tough sell too. So it's just, he's going to be the linchpin of what are you doing here schematically. And I think Kirk Cousins, you kind of mentioned, you know, he's a computer, he's a cerebral guy, that he's gonna be able to see that right away. Like, he's probably gonna look and say, you know, what's going on with London and Pitts? You know, are you trying to sneak a safety or sneak a linebacker? Like you said, if London's inside, that's gonna be a huge problem. And then again, Rondale Moore has the they always say the whiplap routes, that good luck, you know, good luck if you have anyone. And frankly, a nickel corner might have a tough time, like you said, with early diagnosis from Cousins. Last thing, and again, this is probably, you know, on the scale of what we've talked about, pretty minor, but I was pretty surprised with Jace McClellan, you know, as a round six pick, because I had him as a super sleeper, you know, the Alabama pipeline. The problem is he was coming off an injury, and I wonder, you know, now that you've looked more into the backstory, was he hurt during the process still because he felt like he had to run? He ran 4.7, you know, and just none of the athleticism that you kind of expected. Are we going to look back and, you know, he was a guy that, you know, he gets fully up to speed sometime by week one, or maybe if it's even 2025 and we look back at that as a very proactive and value draft pick by the Falcons for the running back 3+ spot? Or is it something where, hey, the board was pretty dire, they are looking for running back 3, the available options were not that great, but you know, it's a questionable decision based on the profile we have today of McClellan. I just kind of wonder if he was never fully right, and then I would ask, why do you run, you know, a 4.7 and put that up if that was the case? So quizzical to me. I wonder what you know, being a lot closer tied to, you know, those picks and going through the draft process with the team, what you kind of thought.
Yeah, to me, I do think the 4-7 is a little bit misleading. And I mean, the home run speed was never an aspect of Jace's game. I think you saw kind of reports going into that individual pro day that expected him to run in the 4-5s. I would think that that's probably closer to what his game speed would be. But again, he's not really somebody that I think is going to run away from defenses. Instead, I look at him as a player who right now it's probably every facet of his game is like a C plus to a B caliber across the board, whether that's pass blocking, whether that's, you know, the interior vision, the ability to bounce it outside, the ability to run through tackles. And, you know, that sounds like it's not that great, right? A C plus to a B, but we are talking about a sixth round pick who is going to be coming in to a backfield where he's not going to be expected to really contribute all that much because you have one of the best 1-2 punches in the league with Tyler Allgeier and Bijan Robinson. Instead, what I think they're going to be able to do is work with him, develop him, bring those C pluses back into the B minus B range, and really make him a very well-rounded player who can be a versatile option for you in case you need to spell one of those two guys. He can come in kind of any situation and give you a little bit of something. And that has been that was kind of a trend for the entire Falcons draft, is that versatility. And I know a lot of fans here in Atlanta hated hearing that word on draft night because it's just kind of, they would rather have somebody who does one thing really, really well, because for a lot of years, the Falcons have kind of looked at those versatile players and some have panned out, some haven't. But I think people are just like, go get the dude who can do one thing, go get Jahmyr Gibbs, who's just faster than anybody else, right? Go get Jameson Williams, who's just going to run by every, like, this offense is, like we just talked about, kind of based on that versatility and based on kind of defining the matchup for the defense and then exploiting the area where the defense can't match up very well. And the other aspect to Jace McClellan that I think shouldn't be overlooked is the changes to the kickoff and special teams rules. I think he is immediately going to have kind of a home on special teams, as usually your third running back does. But I know that he didn't do this in college. I've been really thinking about the possibility of seeing him as a kick returner. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if when training camp and they're doing rookie mini camps right now, if he doesn't kind of line up back there the first week or so with when you've got like six or seven guys who you're looking at just returning kicks and seeing how they operate, because instead of having to navigate a minefield now where agility is maybe the most important factor, it's really going to be more of like a rugby style where you've got one clean line. And if you can break through that line, you've got a chance. And to me, that's more of a running back mentality. So I think that him and his well-roundedness, his ability to do a little bit of everything, not at a super high level, but then also kind of that vision, that third back special teams value could be just ultimately what they decided to prioritize on day three with that sixth round pick, because ultimately you're not really getting, I think, a true standout player in the sixth round. You want to get a guy who either brings a high floor and can come in and you have a kind of vision for how to use him right away, or you're swinging for the fences with these traits that you think are just weren't tapped into for whatever reason previously in their career. And then the final aspect of this, and you look at what the Falcons have done under Terry Fontenot, the last few drafts, they value guys from big SEC programs. You know, they took Zion Logue with their final pick as well from Georgia. They're not going to be intimidated at all. The moment is not going to be too big for them when they get into their first training camp, when they're lining up and, you know, he lines up and sees David Onyemata and Grady Jarrett right across from him. Like, that's not going to be a moment that he's afraid of. And so I think you're going to get quality reps from these guys in practice, in training camp, in preseason games to really help the coaching staff evaluate everybody around them. So I think that was also part of the calculus there as well.
I'm thinking of the notable running backs that went, you know, in the last 20 picks before that selection of McClellan. And it's the opposite of what you just said. You know, if they're big program hunting, Rasheen Ali, you know, out of Marshall, Tyrone Tracy out of Purdue, Isaiah Davis is a small schooler, and then Kamani Vidal, another small schooler. Those are the guys I kind of had my eye on, you know, in that range of the draft. And they were all gone, number one. But number two, they might not have even been higher than McClellan on their board. Like you're saying, the pedigree that he had from Alabama. And like you said, if he gets closer to that 4-5s, you know, gets back up to speed and there's minimal pressure on him, obviously, because it sounds like you would expect, Tyler Allgeier to really hold that job. And this is more of a, could he be the backup in 2025, 2026? And he's a special teamer. And in case of emergency, break glass for an injury, more so than anything else offensively that he's probably going to proactively earn, with that 1-2 combination they already have. So it was a really, like you said, a luxury pick, a special team pick, and maybe something for the future of McClellan can develop, into something greater in the future with minimal investment. Will McFadden, thank you so much for sharing your time and talents here. A valuable resource on NFL Falcons. Where can folks find your content and, what's kind of in the works since the draft and then upcoming, obviously, for covering the team?
Yeah, Chad, again, thank you so much for having me on, man. This was a blast. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Will McFadden. Just had a new episode of Believe in Falcons go up yesterday. Bryce Lewis, who covers the Hawks for Believe, but he joined me for a little schedule release preview. And instead of, we went week by week and just predicted what we thought each matchup could be. So it's, I didn't get enough of the mock drafts during mock draft season. Maybe I'm the only person in the world, but we decided to do a mock schedule release. So you can go check that out wherever you get your podcasts. And then Wednesday, following the announcement of all the schedule stuff, I will hop on with my co-host Ovi Mahaley, and we will go down kind of game by game and do the old radio shtick and just pick the wins and losses, even though I hate that exercise because it's super meaningless. But we'll do it anyway because it is kind of fun. So that is what I've got in the works. And then a mailbag Thursdays on thefalcoholic.com. So if you have any questions, shoot them to me over on Twitter and I will answer them in that mailbag. But again, Chad, this was a blast. Thank you so much for having me on.
Excellent. Yeah. And I'm guessing in that schedule release and mock record, you're probably gonna have a couple more wins, than last year, because things are pointing up. As you said, you fix quarterback, you fix your team, and frankly, you fix your record, in that NFC South that's exploitable right now. So at Will McFadden, once again, there on X, you can find all of his content and links upcoming, as Will mentioned. I'm Chad Parsons. Until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.